Tapping into VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, John Russell, Jill Robbins, and Dan Novak. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
A Nobel Peace Prize won by Russian reporter Dmitry Muratov last year has been sold in an effort to help Ukrainian child refugees. The award sold for $103.5 million during an auction in New York Monday night. The auction company that held the sale, Heritage Auctions, did not identify the buyer. The auction, which lasted about 3 weeks, ended on World Refugee Day. Heritage said all the money will go to the United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF. The organization is currently involved in efforts to help children displaced by the war in Ukraine. The Associated Press reported the sale broke the record for a Nobel Prize that has been publicly sold. The highest price paid for a Nobel had been $4.76 million in 2014, the news agency said. That prize was co-awarded to American James Watson in 1962 for his efforts in discovering the structure of DNA. Muratov told the AP he was surprised at the award's high selling price. "I was hoping that there was going to be an enormous amount of solidarity, but I was not expecting this to be such a huge amount," he said. Muratov was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in October 2021. He shared the prize with reporter Maria Ressa of the Philippines. The two reporters, or journalists, were honored for their efforts to safeguard free speech in their countries while facing heavy government pressure. Muratov helped launch the Novaya Gazeta independent newspaper. The Nobel Committee had called the publication the most independent newspaper in Russia today. The committee praised the paper for providing Russians with important information rarely mentioned by other media. Muratov dedicated his award to six Novaya Gazeta reporters who had been murdered after reporting on human rights violations and corruption in Russia. He donated $500,000 of his Nobel Prize money to aid organizations. Muratov has been highly critical of Russia's 2014 annexation of Crimea and the war Russia launched in February in Ukraine. The latest conflict has led nearly 5 million Ukrainians to flee to other countries for safety. The war has created the largest humanitarian crisis in Europe since World War II. Independent journalists in Russia have increasingly come under pressure from the Russian government. Since President Vladimir Putin came into power more than 20 years ago, About 24 journalists have been killed, the AP reported. I'm Brian Lynn. People in Thailand's capital, Bangkok, are enjoying a new park full of trees, water, plants, and birds. Every day, crowds visit Benjakitti Forest Park to get a taste of nature in the heart of the city. The new park is part of an effort to create a greener, more livable Bangkok by 2030. Another park next to the site was built in the 1990s, with a large man-made lake. But the new 41-hectare extension has captured the capital's imagination. On weekends, up to 12,000 people a day use its nature trail, walkways, and bike paths. The park used to be home to factories operated by the country's state-run tobacco industry. Changes on the new park began several years ago. Visitors are now enjoying the park ahead of its official opening, planned for August. I love it, said 44-year-old music teacher Lukachai Krichnoi. I love the outdoors and fresh air. Bangkok does not have that many big parks. I am glad we have this beautiful space. The design mixes the old with the new. Designers kept more than 1,700 of the site's original trees, then planted almost 7,000 new ones. As they age, the trees' leaves will grow and spread, deepening the park's cover. The area is already popular with nature lovers, such as bird watcher and photographer Somsok Chaitrong, who said he visits almost every day. He says he has seen more than 40 kinds of birds so far, though others have counted many more. The way they designed the park is quite special because they put all kinds of trees here, he said. You know, the birds go where the food is. Water plays a central part in the park. Small bodies of water, called ponds, and islands create a wildlife-friendly environment. The park's water system also helps clean wastewater from nearby communities. One of the park's designers noted that a major goal was to improve people's relationships with the natural world. The landscape architect, Cha Chen In Sung, said the green area can be more than just a place for running and other kinds of exercise. It can also increase awareness about the environment and demonstrate the importance of linking living with nature. Bangkok is mostly surrounded by concrete and steel. Officials have estimated the city's population currently enjoys just 7 square meters of green space per person. The aim is to increase that to 10 square meters by 2030 through a park building program and by planting more trees. But Bangkok's real problem, one expert argues, is not the average amount of available green space. A big concern is also how much green space is spread throughout the city. The new park demonstrates that point. Benjakitti Park is located in the area where the green area per capita is much higher than other areas. The park is very nice, very beautiful. I love it. But how about other districts? Said Niramun Sirisakul.
She is the director of Chulalongkorn University's Urban Design and Development Center. 6 kilometers from Benjikidi's beautiful surroundings, another green area stretches across Bangkok's Chao Phraya River. At sunset, the area offers large views and a cool breeze. The 280-meter-long Chao Phraya Sky Park was created 2 years ago from a bridge that was built but never used. Niraman says Bangkok needs to create more of these kinds of areas to expand the amount of green space in the city in a more equal way. I'm John Russell.
China launched a new generation aircraft carrier on Friday. It is the first such ship to be both designed and built in China. It marks a major step for the country as it seeks to strengthen its navy. Chinese state media reports said the Type 003 carrier, named Fujian, left where it was built outside Shanghai on Friday morning. The Type 003 ship is thought to be as advanced as Western carriers. China is seeking to turn its navy, already the world's largest, into a multi-carrier force. Rizwan Ramat is a Singapore-based researcher with the defense intelligence company Jane's. He said, "This is an important milestone for China's military-industrial complex." He said the ship demonstrates that Chinese engineers are now able to manufacture all the fighting equipment that makes up modern naval warfare. He added that the ability to build a very complex warship will bring other benefits for the Chinese shipbuilding industry. China's first aircraft carrier was a repurposed Soviet ship. Its second was built in China but based on a Soviet design. The Type 003 employs a launch system known as a catapult launch. China's official Xinhua News Agency reported on Friday that the catapult launch is an electromagnetic type system. That system was first developed by the U.S. Navy. Ramat said the system will permit the ship to launch more kinds of aircraft, which is necessary for China to expand its naval power. China's People's Liberation Army, Navy, or PLAN, has been working for many years to become a force that is able to operate worldwide rather than only near the Chinese mainland. The PLAN currently has an estimated 355 ships, including submarines. U.S. experts estimate the force will grow to 420 ships by 2025 and 460 ships by 2030. In its report to the U.S. Congress last year on China's military abilities, the Department of Defense said the carrier development program was very important to Chinese Navy development. It said the program will permit Chinese naval operations to go beyond East Asia into increasingly longer ranges. In recent years, China has expanded its presence into the Indian Ocean, the Western Pacific, and beyond. It also set up its first overseas base in the African nation of Djibouti, where the U.S., Japan, and other nations also have a military presence. China recently signed a security agreement with the Solomon Islands, a nation in the Pacific Ocean. Some observers are concerned that the agreement could give China a military camp in the South Pacific. I'm Jill Robbins.
The U.S. Supreme Court ruled Tuesday that the state of Maine may not bar religious schools from a tuition assistance program. The case involved a rule of Maine's Department of Education. The rule permits families who live in areas that do not have public schools to receive public money to send their children to a public or private school of their choosing. That program, however, bars the money from going to religious schools. Families that want to send their children to religious schools say the law violates their religious rights. In a 6-3 decision, the High Court ruled that the Maine program violates the Constitution's protections for religious freedoms. Writing for the majority, Chief Justice John Roberts wrote, "The state pays tuition for certain students at private schools, so long as the schools are not religious. That is discrimination against religion." The court's three liberal justices disagreed with the majority decision. This court continues to dismantle the wall of separation between church and state that the framers fought to build, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote. The ruling is the latest in a line of decisions from the Supreme Court that have favored religion-based discrimination claims. The court is separately looking at the case of a football coach who says he has a First Amendment right to pray at midfield immediately after games. The court's decision on Tuesday immediately affects Maine and Vermont, a neighboring state with a similar program. But the ruling could also fuel a renewed push for school choice programs in some of the states that have so far not directed public money to private religious education. In the main case, two families wanted to send their children to Christian schools in Bangor and Waterville. The schools, Bangor Christian School and Temple Academy, have said in court records that they do not accept gay, lesbian, or transgender students and teachers. At the time, Maine officials said that religious schools are excluded from the program because the education they provide is not equivalent to public education. The lawsuit was filed last year following a Supreme Court ruling saying that a Missouri program was wrong to deny money to a religious school for fixing a playground. That ruling opened the door for more cases aimed at changing rules about religious schools and public money. Last year, the Supreme Court ruled in a case from Montana that states do not have to permit public money to be used in private education, but they cannot keep religious schools out of such programs once created. I'm Dan Novak.
Today, we visit a national park that marks one of the most important events in American history. We are exploring the Gettysburg National Military Park in the small town of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Much of the area around Gettysburg still looks like it did in the 1860s, during the Civil War. The town is in the middle of farm country. All around are fields of wheat, corn, and other crops. Cows chew on grass under a warm morning sun. Roads that pass through Gettysburg lead to Baltimore, Washington, and other big cities. But years ago, they served another purpose. The roads brought two opposing armies to Gettysburg. One was the United States Army of the Potomac, commanded by General George Gordon Meade. The other was the Confederate Army of Northern Virginia, led by General Robert E. Lee. His troops had moved north into Pennsylvania from Virginia. There, they had won a series of battles. Now, they were on the move to defeat Meade's army. Lee believed that a southern victory on northern land would force a negotiated settlement of the war. This would mean independence for the Confederate states that were attempting to leave the Union.
The Battle of Gettysburg began on July 1, 1863. More than 170,000 soldiers fought for 3 days. It was the largest battle ever fought in North America. When it ended on July 3rd, more than 50,000 soldiers were dead, wounded, or missing. Many more would die later from their wounds. In the end, General Lee's army lost the battle. The Civil War, though, continued for 2 more years. But Confederate hopes for independence were never again as high as they had been at Gettysburg. Soon after the Great Battle, people began to visit Gettysburg to try to understand what happened there. One of those visitors, on November 19, 1863, was President Abraham Lincoln. He was invited to help dedicate a ceremony for Union soldiers killed in the battle. Lincoln spoke for just 2 minutes. His speech began this way.
47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
President Lincoln had never been satisfied with the reality of American life at that time. The Declaration of Independence in 1776 had declared all men equal. Yet in the South, and earlier in the North as well, black men and women were held as slaves. In his address at Gettysburg, Lincoln described a new future for a nation that would be reunited.
It is for us the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work for which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom.
Gettysburg National Military Park was established in 1895, 32 years after the deadly battle. Gettysburg is the most visited of the Civil War battlefields. Every year, about 2 million people visit the park from around the country and the world. The battlefield covers more than 2,400 hectares. Visitors can find more than 1,300 outdoor sculptures around the battlefield. These are monuments and memorials placed by soldiers' groups and state militias in areas where their troops fought. Volunteer guides explain to visitors what happened in each area of the huge battlefield. Visitors can also tour the battlefields on their own, by foot, by car, or by bicycle. Many visitors start their visit to Gettysburg at the Gettysburg Museum of the Civil War. The museum has the world's largest collection of Civil War objects. The museum has more than 1 million items, from soldiers' private notebooks and uniforms to original maps of the battlefield.
The museum also houses the Gettysburg Cyclorama painting. This kind of artwork surrounds the people looking at it. The painting shows the final attack in the Battle of Gettysburg, Pickett's charge. George Pickett was a Confederate general. On July 3, 1863, he led a charge against stronger Union forces. It was a disaster for the Confederate soldiers. French artist Paul Philippoteau and a team of 20 artists created the painting in the 1880s. Philippoteau and his team visited the battlefield. It took more than 1 year for the huge painting to be completed. The cyclorama is 114 meters long and almost 13 meters tall. It has long been one of the most popular parts of the Gettysburg experience. But by the 1990s, the painting was in poor condition. Experts warned that if the cyclorama was not repaired, the painting could be lost. A restoration project began in 2003. The painting was cleaned and separated into its 14 parts, and later moved into the new center. There, the original canvas was sewn onto new cloth made in China. Park Service officials say China was one of the few countries able to produce cloth in the sizes needed. Then each part was hung and sewn together. A team of cyclorama experts from Poland worked on the project in Gettysburg. The repair work of the Gettysburg Cyclorama marked one of the largest art conservation efforts ever in North America.
After the museum, tourists can visit the Soldiers' National Cemetery, where many of the Union soldiers who died during the Battle of Gettysburg are buried. The cemetery was dedicated on November 19, 1863, the same day President Lincoln gave his Gettysburg Address. Since 1865, the cemetery has been a burial ground for soldiers from all of America's wars. Gettysburg brings history to life during the summer and fall with its living historians. These actors and experts show visitors what life was like for a soldier here in one of the most historically important places in America. The words of America's 16th president from the Gettysburg battlefield have never been forgotten. Historians agree that Lincoln's Gettysburg Address defined Americans as a people who believed in freedom, democracy, and equality. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.